Hey everybody, welcome to the On the Rocks podcast. I'm Denver Post sports writer Kyle Newman, alongside my colleague Patrick Saunders, bringing you another edition of the show here today with spring training looming just around the corner in Scottsdale. And for this segment of the show, we're going to be taking some questions. We'll call it the podcast mailbag, Patrick.
Yeah.
So you obviously do your mailbag online. It's a big hit. Again, folks, head to denverpost.com/Rockies to check that out and submit questions. But we got a trio of questions for the podcast here today that we're going to be running down from some of our fans and listeners around the area.
Okay, let's start off with a question from Victor from Alameda, California. Victor submits questions to my online mailbag frequently, and they're usually very good. He's a baseball-savvy guy, as far as I can tell. Pays attention to the Rockies. I'm going to throw this out at you, Kyle, and see what you think. He says, I know I might ruffle a few feathers with what I'm about to say, but I think the Rockies should trade Nolan Arenado. Maybe with the Rockies trying to re-sign Arenado for a long-term deal, maybe that's one of the biggest reasons why they were extremely limited in free agent signings this offseason. Victor also says, look, Nolan is a great player in the face of the franchise, but I don't think the Rockies should agree to a $200 million plus deal that would hurt the re-signing other Rockies in the next few years. The best deal for the Rockies, I think, is the 4 years, $120 million. So what is that, $30 million a year for 4 years? But not a serious long-term deal that would hurt payroll later on. And Victor adds, P.S., welcome back, Mark Reynolds, a real first baseman. Well, Victor, you got a question great. In, you got your opinion in. And
nice little barb there at the end.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who that's directed to, but I have a guess. Anyway, Kyle, your thoughts on the basic question there. Should the Rockies try to sign Nolan to a long-term deal? It's a legitimate question.
It is a legitimate question, and I think I will agree with Victor here.
Is that right? Interesting.
In the fact that I don't think they should sign him to a mega deal. And
well,
even
what's a mega deal?
Okay, so going into the offseason, maybe you're thinking 10 years, 300 mil, like a Harper-type contract. Now with how things are shaking out, okay, maybe 8 years, maybe 7 years. I don't know. Even that makes me nervous for a mid-market team like
and
the Rockies.
Will be 28 in April.
Right. So he's a couple years older than Manny and Bryce.
Right.
And not that, you know, you can't be a great ball player into your 30s, but I think that's, you know, there's, you have to consider that. And as well as the fact that just you've already gone down this road in the offseason of basically looking like you're going to try and make a play for Nolan with how quiet you've been. So I think you do need to make a play, given that you've already kind of sacrificed some of the potential moves you could have made to, you know, for what's down the line. But you can't break the bank on them, in my opinion, especially when you got guys like Trevor Story coming up due for a big deal here in the next couple of years. Kyle Freeland is going to need to get paid. Germán Márquez is going to need to get paid at some point. So where are your priorities going to lie? And these past couple years, the Breidich blueprint has indicated the priorities are going to lie with mostly drafting and develop, and a lot hinging on that pitching staff and the young guys that they got coming up through there. So it's a long-winded answer to the question there, but I agree that a super mega deal is not in Colorado's best interest, but also to trade him, I think. And we discussed this on a different segment of the podcast this week. The Rockies really got to be out of it at the deadline for that to come into play. Because at the end of the day, if you're a Rockies fan or if you're Jeff Breidich, you also don't want him going over to the Dodgers
right. In
free agency.
I think I'm going to agree with you to a certain extent. I don't know if at this point you lock him up to be a lifetime Rocky, a la Todd Helton.
Right.
Or a la what was supposed to be Troy Tulowitzki. Of course, it didn't work out. I think Victor says, 4 years? I'd go a little farther than that. I would give him, I think I'd go six, something similar to what Charlie Blackman did.
Okay.
I would go six, and I would approach $200 million. I think the Rockies will have a renegotiated TV contract coming up here in a couple years. They're getting more money in. I think Dick Monfort has indicated the Rockies can handle this kind of contract. If it was me, I wouldn't go 4 for 30 years for a total of 120. I'd bump it up to 6, and maybe with an option or something at the tail end, which would allow maybe a mutual option, which would allow Nolan to get out if he wanted to, the Rockies to get out, something like that. But I do think for the good of the team, he's still the heart and soul of his team. I don't think he's going to go for anything. I don't think Nolan's going to go for a 4-year deal. I think you're going to have to go at least 6. And if I'm Dick Monfort, I go for that. I don't go 8, and I certainly don't go 10.
Right.
But I'd go 6.
And I would agree with that, too. I think the 4-year deal, 120, I mean, yeah, it's $30 million a year. But these players at this point, I mean, they want the security. They want, and 4 years for Nolan Arenado, one of the best players in the game, is not exactly a long-term secure contract, right, comparatively. And I know, you know, these things are just changing so rapidly in the last couple off seasons with, like, okay, what is a long-term mega deal? Well, the Albert Pujols deals of old, the Stanton deals of old, I don't think we'll ever see those again.
No. Okay, let's go to a question from Rick from Aurora. And he says, I feel like Brian Shaw is going to have a great year for the Rockies. Would love your thoughts on him and the bullpen. Thanks. And, of course, Brian Shaw, we well know, right-hand reliever, was a, I wouldn't say a star, but certainly was a workhorse, an effective back-of-the-game reliever for the Indians. A lot of innings on that right arm. Came to Colorado last year and basically was a bust. There's no other way to say it.
Yep.
So Rick from Aurora thinks Brian Shaw's going to rebound and have a great year. I'm curious what you think.
I think Rick, respectfully, from Aurora, love Aurora, live there, is drinking the purple Kool-Aid. I mean,
wow.
To say he's going to have a great year, I think that's just a stretch. I mean, I got to see this guy pitch, because everything I saw last year from his pregame routine to everything that went on in games gave me no confidence at all. Not just for last year, but that this guy can even turn it around at all. I know he and McGee went up to Driveline and much.
But just for a short term.
Right.
Right.
And much ado was made about that. And I don't really put much stock in it, because not everyone's Adam Ottavino.
Right. And for those wondering, if you don't know, Driveline is a baseball, a pitching academy or a clinic. What do you call it? It's up in the Seattle area. Anyway.
Pitch design.
Exactly. It uses a lot of video, a lot of numbers, a lot of analytics. And Adam Ottavino, as you mentioned, was one of the components that helped him turn around his terrible 2017 season into his wonderful 2018 season. Did I get that right? Yeah. 17
yes.
was bad. 18 was terrific for Adam. And now he landed a 3-year, $27 million deal with the Yankees, which, of course, is the same amount of money last year that the Rockies gave both Jake McGee and Brian Shaw, 3 years, 27.
Just makes me cringe, Patrick.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Brian Shaw, if you looked at his velocity, et cetera, last year, a lot of people were saying, wow, he has so many innings under his belt. You know, he's used that right arm so much. Clearly, his velocity must be down. But the numbers did not say that. Velocity, for the most part, was pretty good. It was pitch location that was so bad with him. He gave up a career-high number of home runs. He was just very hittable. So I'm curious, do you think that was adjusting to Coors Field and the altitude? Was it just a fickle year because relievers are known to have those kind of years? Or you just think he's just not ever going to return to the pitcher the Rockies had hoped he'd be?
Yeah, I don't think he will.
You really don't?
I really don't. And honestly, on the scale of returning to form, I would put Dunn and McGee over Shaw in terms of, I think they're going to return to form at least better than Shaw will. I just, you know, and call, I don't know. I don't want to be such a hater, but I just, you know, we've talked about it before. We see these guys every single day and how they approach the game. And yeah, Adam Ottavino had a terrible season. He turned it around. But I've seen Adam Ottavino and just kind of how he approaches things. We see how Wade Davis approaches things. And it's been a common defense for Jeff Breidich throughout the offseason when he's been asked about the bullpen. Like, well, you know, Ottavino had a terrible season. He turned it around. And, you know, Russin, you know, could turn it around. And, like, there's been citing these examples. But I just, man, hope is a dangerous plan.
Yeah.
And especially when it's with Brian Shaw. I mean, how many times can Bud Black trot him out there in April, May, June if he's not, you know, the Brian Shaw of the Indians that we thought we were getting,
right,
or that the Rockies thought we were getting?
You know, as long as we're on this topic, and I'll just throw my two cents in on this too. We're talking about Brian Shaw, and we have to link him to the lefty, Jake McGee. As people well know, Jake McGee made, you know, he made his bones, so to speak, in Tampa is almost exclusively a fastball pitcher. I mean, he brought the heat. Well, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but he's lost 2 to 3 miles an hour off that fastball since his days in Tampa Bay, and at times maybe more. And he's tried to be more of a versatile pitcher, adding a slider here and there. My concern with Jake is, you know, he had a minor knee operation a couple years ago. I'm wondering, and I don't know this for certain, but watching him and seeing him iced up a lot in the clubhouse, I'm wondering if the knees have become, I don't want to say chronic, but problematic, to where is he going to be able to push off and generate that force and do the off-season work that he needs to do to be a dominant fastball pitcher from the left side? You know, because that's heat from the left side is a very difficult thing for hitters to deal with. You know, and Jake's a hard worker, I think. He's dedicated, but he doesn't. Last year, he certainly didn't look to me like the kind of dominant force he was at times with the Rockies and certainly before in his career. So both he and Shaw, boy, it's pretty important that they bounce back this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, more thoughts on the bullpen. We've talked about this on other podcasts, but Russin, Oberg, Sunwan Oh, some younger guys, Yency Almonte, DJ Johnson, they will also be critical in kind of shoring up the bullpen, especially if the dumpster fire from last season continues into this one.
Yeah, exactly. And then, Kyle, the third question. All right, this question comes from Mike in Boulder. And Mike has a question about the Rockies catching. The essence of it is, why are the Rockies not trying to sign a quality catcher? There are not many of them left out there. The combined batting stats for our catchers last year was far below most teams. Is there not someone in the farm system? And then Mike makes the comment that he realizes the Rockies catchers were great managing the young pitching staff, but he thinks they need more consistent hitting. Kyle, your thoughts on the catching situation in the Rockies as we head into spring training and pitchers and catchers report just a few days away. Essentially right now they have Chris Iannetta, Tony Walters, and kind of the outside looking in, Tom Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike is preaching to the choir here, Patrick. A lot of people questioning that. You know, Breidich said the offense was going to be an emphasis, a point of emphasis this offseason. Obviously, they made a couple signings. Daniel Murphy, the most notable of them, but nothing to address the need at catcher. And the stats Mike referencing, I mean, they were second worst in the National League in wins above average at the position. So basically, I mean, they're at the very bottom of the National League in terms of offensive production.
Tony hit 170.
Overall, they hit 206, all three of those guys combined, Murphy, Iannetta, and Walters.
And then Drew Butera.
Andrew Butera a little bit too, right?
Kind of a throwing guy toward the end of the year. Yeah.
So they hit 206, had 15 home runs, 307 on-base percentage, and 544 at-bats across those four guys. Those are team positional lows in every single category. So there's no way around it. You have to get more production out of your catchers. I mean, I'm not saying trade the sky and the moon for JT Realmuto or bring Mike Piazza out of retirement, but my goodness, like I just don't understand what I have perceived as an overemphasis on like the catching or on the defensive aspect of catching. I mean, when they brought in Drew Butera last year midseason, it was like, what? Like, you need more offense, and you bring in a guy who's known for defense and show, I mean, he didn't really do much offensively. Like, I just don't understand it. I think it's going to come back to bite him again this year when consistently out of that position, the Rockies are having offensive problems.
I'm going to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here. I think if you talk to Bud Black about this, he would say, certainly we need more offense from the catching position. But I think higher on the priority for Bud Black is game calling, the ability, the relationship, if you will, between the pitchers and the catchers. I think Bud overall was relatively pleased with how Iannetta and Walters handled the staff. Not that it's not that it was perfect, not that those guys are a Molina or a Posey or Johnny Bench from my era or
but at, but at what cost, though? You know, like, I understand that, especially the young staff.
No, I'm playing devil's advocate here. I agree. They can't continue to have the catching position be basically an instant out some of the time. So, you know, it's give and take. And I also understand this. And I'm not trying to defend Chris or Tony that to the hilt. Catching a Coors Field is one of the most difficult things in sports.
Yep.
It takes its toll. There's a reason why Rockies catchers don't catch 120, 130 games. 100 games behind the dish for the Rockies, 105, 110 maybe, is about max because it's very wearing. But I'll say this. I'm not going to say that those guys can't get it done offensively. But what I'd like to see them do more is – get it done offensively in bigger moments. And I look back to Yorvi Torrealba, who was with the Rockies in 07 and 09. Now, nobody's going to say that Yorvi Torrealba was an all-star catcher. But what Yorvi did, he had a terrific relationship with the pitchers. For lack of a better term, he was a badass. I mean, he
cussing on the podcast.
Well, okay. But he was. I mean, he man,
he was. I remember watching him play.
He did not need Bud Black to come out to the mound to tell John Gray to get his head on straight. He would do it himself. Plus, in big moments, and I'm thinking particularly the playoffs and during the stretches when the Rockies needed it, Yorvi Torrealba was the man. So it would really be good if the Rockies could get that kind of person behind the plate. Chris Iannetta, intelligent. He knows the game. He's a veteran. He's probably tougher mentally than most people see.
Yep.
But he's not a fiery guy. And sometimes you want a catcher to be a fiery guy. I'm not sure the Rockies have that right now.
Well, and, you know, you talk stepping up in big moments. Wolters did have the big
hit. Game-winning hit against the Cubs.
In the wild card game. And you know what? I am rooting, honestly, for Wolters, for Iannetta. I really like Chris Iannetta. He's a really baseball-savvy guy. I think he does great work with the staff. But, yeah, I mean, you got to get more production out of that. And the question also addressed, hey, any young guys, any prospects? Not really at the position. Dom Nunez, the Yard Goats catcher, he spent the past two seasons in Hartford, hit .222 last year in 92 games. He's their highest-rated catching prospect, and he's not MLB ready. You know, he'll be at camp. He got a non-roster invite because they need a lot of catchers there, but he's not ready. And then you got Tom Murphy, you know, obviously caught a lot for the Isotopes last year, and he'll be in the mix. But again, question marks there too.
I think this for Tom Murphy is a real make-or-break year. I think he's 28 now, or he soon will be 28. He's got a lot of minor league miles on him. He's had multiple injuries through the years. Boy, the thing, he's compelling. Tom has shown flashes of power at the plate. He's got a decent arm behind the plate. He's still a little stiff back there. And I'm not saying this just me. I mean, I've talked to people about this. He's still not a particularly adept game caller. All those things you want. I root for Tom Murphy. I think the potential is there.
Right.
It's kind of put up or shut up time for Tom Murphy this spring training. That's my opinion anyway.
Again, folks, on the Rocks podcast, Kyle Newman alongside Patrick Saunders. And before we close this segment, right on topic, right on cue, breaking news from Jeff Passan at ESPN. Phillies and Marlins agreed to a trade that will send JT Realmuto to Philadelphia for catcher Jorge Alfaro and a couple of pitching prospects. So Phillies spinning stupid, making some more moves. Obviously, they're in the Harper Machado chase too.
Because so many, you know, before the Phillies got back into it, they were in this trade boat, so to speak, early on. And then suddenly it was the Reds over the last week or so. The Phillies are going for it, aren't they?
They're going for it.
I still wonder if, you know, are they Bryce Harper? Are they Manny Machado? Are those still on the radar? Boy, if they are, that's a heck of a team because they have a good young pitching staff.
Yep.
You know,
headlined by Aaron Nola.
Yeah. So, wow. Interesting. That's been brewing for quite some time. You know, and for those fans who have emailed both Kyle and myself throughout the offseason about why the Rockies didn't try for Real Muto. Well, the asking price is extraordinarily high. And yes, a franchise catcher is great, but I just don't think the Rockies were willing to give up that many prospects. And if I'm not mistaken, Real Muto's a free agent after next year, I think, which I may be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure he has this year, next year in his contract, and that's, unless the Phillies renegotiate it. So to give up a ton for a two-year catcher is a little risky. I like Real Muto a lot, by the way, but I never thought the Rockies were even entertaining the idea of going after him.
Phillies playing risky business in the offseason, Rockies playing it safe. Again, folks, this is the On the Rocks podcast. Thanks for tuning in to this episode where we took some podcast mailbag questions. If you have some questions for a future podcast, we'll be doing this segment on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. So shoot us some questions via Twitter or via email, psaunders or knewman@denverpost.com. Till next week, folks, take it easy.